One.
This call is being recorded.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, I'm your host, Evan Setter, and as always, I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. We both cover SB Nation's Bright Side of the Sun. You can follow me on Twitter at eSetter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, make sure for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, if you aren't already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support there is very much appreciated. We're joining you actually the day after the Lakers game because it was on a Sunday. We're back for our usual Monday through Friday episodes this week. And we're not going to go through our usual recap of the Lakers game because the Suns had a 24-point loss, 120-96. So not really much we can hit on as far as that goes. But I think for me, Brendan, the biggest takeaway for that is but Devin Booker's injury, which we'll get into in our second segment of the show.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the biggest takeaway, if we want to get right into the game here, it was just a subpar effort in the second half of that game. And by the way, the Suns led that game 25-8 at one point in the first quarter. And the Lakers brought it back to a 10-point deficit at the end of the first quarter. But overall, it seems like once Devin Booker went out of that game in the second quarter, whenever that happened, and sometime in the second or third quarter, the team kind of fell flat and they kind of knew, like, well, our star player is gone. We're not going to win this game.
Yeah, it was he played 17 minutes, so late in the second quarter, I believe is what it was. Now I'm spacing on it too, but the real problem, and I think this was one that you could have foreseen, is this team just has no answer for LeBron James. I mean, there's a lot of teams that can say that in the league and worry about playing him, but you know, there's different ways that you can mitigate his impact, and you can have a guy who's going to go out and stop him, or, you know, make things really difficult for him scoring the ball, and you can have a defense that kind of closes his passing lanes and all that stuff. Suns clearly don't have that, but you could also, you know, try to go toe to toe with him scoring the ball. And I think that's where Booker leaving the game, but also even with Booker, the Suns just don't have the firepower to keep up with the Lakers. We saw that in the second game of the season. We saw that again, of course, in an even honestly a bigger way, I think, yesterday, because the Suns kind of shot themselves in the foot in the first matchup. This one was more about just kind of the raw power of the Lakers offense and the Suns having nothing to say about it.
Yeah, Kyle Kuzma actually led the way in the Lakers with scoring with 23 points. LeBron chipped in 22, 8-6, and a block, plus 12 in a day for LeBron. Tyson Chandler, by the way, former Sun, in 17 minutes, nearly there, plus 23 with 3 points, 11 rebounds. So he kind of probably took us a little bit more personally than usual. But I think for me, I want to touch on this really quickly, Brandon, because I found it interesting. But Ryan Anderson played 8 minutes yesterday. TJ Warren still remains out. And it sounds like from today's practice, which I went to, Devin Booker and TJ Warren are likely out of tomorrow's game. So it might be another rough one against Sacramento. But in his place, they had Ryan Anderson try to play on Sunday against the Lakers. He played 8 minutes, and he was an impressive minus 16 in 8 minutes. So I just think it's really shocking. Like, an underlying story from the entire league this year, Brandon, is just the fall off of Ryan Anderson, I feel like. Because this guy used to be one of the best shooters in the league. Now all of a sudden he can't hit anything.
Yeah, it's very weird. Very tentative, too. I don't remember much from his 8 minutes, but I remember another opportunity where he had the ball and on the right wing had an open enough, something he definitely would have taken earlier in his career, even 2-3 seasons ago. And he's kind of just pausing, dribbled the ball, kind of put his back to the basket and gave it up to Rashawn Holmes. Not a play that obviously is very memorable, but that one stuck out to me as just, again, over and over, we see plays like that from him where you would have been no doubt about it. I mean, he was a guy, funnily, like, that's a guy who shot too much early in his career. Like, his weakness as a player was that he would take bad shots because he was so confident and could make some crazy, you know, fall away Dirk-like mid-range shots that he shouldn't have been taking. Now it's like the exact opposite. It is very weird.
Yeah, and before we go any further, I just want to name off some names as far as the positives go for the Suns. Josh Jackson played 30 minutes, had 13.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block on 5 of 13 field goal attempts, 0 of 3 from 3. So he continues to shoot those threes still with the green light. But Mikal Bridges seems to be getting a little bit out of his slump. I might still quantify it as such because he's not taking that many shots, so who knows. But 11 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals in 31 minutes on 4 of 8 field goal attempts, 2 of 5 on 3. So if they're missing Devin Booker for a significant amount of time, let's say the entire month of December, Brendan, those two guys, especially Burgess and Jackson, need to step up because they're both going to be starters if TJ Warren remains out. So it's nice to see those two guys have solid games together, and it's really going to be important for those two guys to keep having solid games together, especially if Booker's out for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I think the game was on. I end up seeing like bits and pieces because they replay them on Fox Sports Arizona, and it's always on at the gym. So I'll just like watch the random second quarter of some game from a couple days ago often. And there was a play that I didn't notice in the first half of that game where Jackson and Ariza were both open in the corner, like just a few feet away from each other. And they both tried to pass up an open three, and then one of them had to take it, and it was Ariza, and he made it. Just kind of encapsulates to me kind of like that Anderson play. Just Jackson is playing better, but there's still a long way to go just because you know that he's kind of overthinking that jump shot too sometimes. And hopefully if Bridges does get out of that slump, this starting lineup can look a little bit better.
By the way, it should be mentioned that Trevor Ariza, you texted me this during the game, and you must have listened to Fry's episode because he actually came out with a fire, a little bit more spark than usual. He
finished started with 11 points, but then only had two the whole rest of the game.
Yeah, and that kind of tells you a little another thing as well, because once the game got out of hand, Trevor Ariza's effort kind of went down as well. So 13 points, 4 steals, which is a big number for him, 3 assists, 9 rebounds on 3 of 7 from 3, 5 of 13 field goal attempts. I went back and ever since Ariza's DNP, not DNP, but his extended absence due to personal reasons, he's now shooting 45% on catch and shoot 3 since then, and he's averaging 2 steals a game. So it seems like he's definitely playing better, but it also seems like he's really upping his value more and more as we get closer to our December 15th deadline for guys to sign their contracts who could be traded.
Yeah, it was one of the things I noted in that big piece about him, you know, what the Suns have kind of turned around. And that was obviously before this new wave of injuries kind of put them right back where they were before that stretch earlier in the season, just getting blown out. But one of the things that has continued even with these injuries is Ariza. And I think, you know, he's knocking down, he's basically back to his usual self statistically for the most part. I mean, taking a lot of threes, making a lot of threes, you know, making plays on defense in the form of steals. And he had some blocks. I think the Pacers game, he had a block or two that I remember standing out, and kind of, I've noticed him on the interior playing defense a little bit more as he's had to fill in for Warren and making some important plays there. But obviously you watch the game and it does come and go, and I think you're right that once it was out of hand yesterday, he was kind of checked out.
Before we go any further, there's another solid performance I wanted to touch on with you, and that's Rashawn Holmes, 23 minutes, 7 of 12 from the field. DeAndre Ayton, by the way, played 25 minutes, was 10 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 of 12 from the field. But I want to focus more on Rashawn here because 7 of 12, he only had 1 rebound, but he had 3 steals, 4 blocks, and he had 15 points in 23 minutes. So it just seems like every game now we're mentioning Rashawn Holmes is a positive. And at this point, I'm not saying that I'd play Ayton and Holmes together, but I feel like Holmes provides an energy that we really haven't seen in a while from a big man. Alan Williams might make sense there, but I feel like this is more of a supercharged version of Alan Williams because I think Rashawn's a lot better than him. But the last few weeks and the last few games, Brandon, Rashawn Holmes is really making a name for himself.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, I think yesterday maybe the statistics popped a little bit more too. 3 steals, 4 blocks. That's really impressive for anybody to do, but overall, I mean, I think the impact was kind of what it's been. He's not going to change the course of a game by himself. And I think, you know, you look at, he was a minus 24. Tyson Chandler was a plus 23. Those are about exactly kind of overlapping minutes. They each played, Holmes played slightly more, 23 minutes, Chandler 17. So, you know, he's not the kind of player that's going to turn the course of the game around, but having him and knowing that he's going to be able to come in and be productive, provide energy and just kind of be a matchup problem for the defense is a great weapon to have. Is something the Suns, I mean, the complete overhaul of the center position for them has been probably one of the bright spots just from obviously Ayton, but even the backup spot, which was a rotating, you know, Tyson Chandler and Greg Monroe nightmare last year. To have Holmes be just 20, 25, 15 solid minutes is great.
Yeah, Rashawn's been one of the bright spots this season, but I know you guys probably looking forward to moving on past this game. 120-96 is the final score again, so we're going to move on here. And before we go any further, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On Suns Twitter page, or not Locked On Suns Twitter page, excuse me, our Locked On NBA national page, which is at Locked On NBA Net. And if you guys want to give them a follow, you can follow along with guys like me, Brendan, David Locke, and the rest of the crew over at Locked On NBA. All the podcasts, we have mostly credentialed around the league so far. Brendan and I are at every Suns game, and a lot of other people on the network are also at their games. So if you're not already, make sure to follow Locked On NBA Net, because that's quickly becoming one of the more valuable resource as far as Twitter goes. And I follow them, Brendan follows them. You should give them a follow too at Locked On NBA Net.
Yeah, so we want to move on to really what is the biggest storyline of this game, which is Devin Booker's injury. Kind of a re-injury, I guess you could say. Aggravated the hamstring that he had initially on his left leg, messed up earlier in the season, caused him to miss some games, and he is likely hitting the bench for a prolonged period. The one thing that I think does change it a little bit, because he did miss games already, this is, you know, trying to recover and then a setback, a re-aggravation of that same thing, or I guess just an aggravation of it. Because like James Harden last year is a guy that I went to. Obviously, we know we've talked plenty about the similarities between those two guys. Their style of play is similar. They both have the ball a lot. So that's where my mind went. He missed, I think, 8 or 9 games last year in the middle of the season with a hamstring injury. Came back and obviously never re-injured it, but managed to play, for the most part, up to his usual standard, won an MVP coming back off that injury. So I'm not necessarily as pessimistic as you. I know you said they might, you know, like sit him for all of December. That's a lot of games. I don't think that they would do that. But, you know, obviously it's not up to the training staff to decide how quickly his leg heals.
By the way, I was at practice today for Brightside of the Sun, and Booker was available to the media, and he said there's no timetable given yet for his injury, so we don't know yet either, neither does Devin. Or maybe they're just keeping it close to the vest for now. But he mentioned that he hasn't played a healthy game yet all season. He's going to be more cautious with the hamstring this time around before playing again. So I think he's going to be out for a more of an extended period, maybe at least 2 weeks, because I was looking up recent hamstring re-aggravation injuries on Google last night from the NBA. And the most recent one I found was Jeremy Lin with the Nets last year. And he missed, after re-aggravating in the first week, he missed 3 to 5 weeks. I didn't check how long it actually was, but the timetable was 3 to 5 weeks for him. So I imagine it's going to be more of the same here. But before I do that, I just want to play a quick audio clip if people haven't heard Booker talk about this yet. I just found it interesting. My phone's available to me. So I'm just going to play really quickly what Booker said about him not playing a healthy game at all. So these guys found it really interesting. You can respond afterwards, Brennan.
I'm around as far as this injury goes.
Yeah. Make sure it's right. Make sure it's fully developed. I don't think I played a healthy game this season. So just making sure my body gets right before I get back out there. If I can't give 100% out there, you know, I'm letting my team down in that way. So just make sure it's right before I get back out there.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's in line with just how he sees things. I'm not overly concerned with it. I feel like this is kind of in line with what my thoughts were when we talked about Booker coming back originally and just kind of the stuff he's been saying throughout the year about nagging pain and discomfort playing basketball. To me, I mean, obviously if it's something like this, which is a specific injury, something that you need to treat and move on from, I completely understand where he's coming from wanting to sit, especially, you know, if it is a prolonged thing, then, you know, it obviously is necessary. But to me, it's like the idea that he hasn't played a healthy game all year. I mean, I would love to hear him elaborate on that. I don't think he will, because it's, you know, not necessary. It doesn't matter to us really, or it doesn't matter to him really, that we know exactly what his pain feels like every single night. But at the same time, I do think it's something that everybody kind of deals with, especially, you know, that Harden comparison, guys like Russell Westbrook, whoever else you want to talk about, that have this astronomic usage rate that Booker has to deal with every night. I think that's just part of the game. I think that's, you know, learning to play through that, learning to kind of protect yourself, shield yourself from those unnecessary blows and falls and putting yourself in jeopardy. I think all that stuff, learning how to play the game and avoid pain and play through it, is just the name of the game for these high usage guys.
Is it fair to ask, Brendan, whether a guy like Devin Booker should be carrying as much high usage as he has? Because I went back and checked last night. Let me pull it up really quick. It's in my notes. But every time he's gotten injured the past few years, and when Kellen Olsen told me all the injuries he's had at practice today, and it was pretty astonishing over the past 18 months how much nicks and bruises this guy's had. But really quickly, I just wanted to bring this up. His usage rate every time he was injured beforehand, or at least, yeah, beforehand, before he was injured each time. 2017-18 season, but the first time he got hurt, was a 28.3 usage rate. Then when he came back from his adductor injury in December and then re-aggravated something else in January or February, it was 31.5 was his usage rate. Then when he came back, got nicked up again, it was 31.3 usage rate. And now in 2018-19, we've already had two separate instances with the hamstring. He had a 32.8 usage rate the first week of the season before he got
and the wrist and the toe.
Yeah, he's had so much injuries, but 32.8 usage rate the first week of the season. Then when he came back over the past month of the season, even though he's been obviously hampered by his hamstring, that usage rate only went down 1% to 31%. So is it fair to ask that maybe Booker's handling too much of this workload?
I mean, sure, but it's exactly the same conversation that so much of the talk around the team has to come back to, which is that stuff doesn't get solved unless there's a trade for a point guard. I mean, there's not another player that can handle that. TJ Warren's not going to start dishing out 8 assists tonight. Josh Jackson just hasn't shown that level of consistency. I mean, if you're doing that, you're making a conscious decision that we're going to make our team worse, even though all of our players are healthy, just to make, you know, kind of protect one of the guys that seems to be susceptible to injury when we put too big of a load on him. And that's just unrealistic.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess he has to grow through, because we saw James Harden. He's carrying a 37 usage rate right now over the past few weeks, which is astonishing. But hopefully Booker gets down that road to being a high usage guy and he thrives in it. But I'm glad you brought the point guard situation, because I just wanted to ask you quickly, how much would a point guard change, at least a starting caliber point guard? We still don't have that on the roster yet. Elliot Kobo's look good, but he's not starting caliber just yet. What would a guy like that do for a player like Devin Booker? Because it seems like when you see his catch and shoot 3%, just around 38%, then pull-ups, it's about 28%. I feel like just having him run off screens and conserving the energy for himself is the best thing for him. And like you said there, it's not really going to solve itself until a point guard comes around.
Exactly. I mean, you think about the guys who are like that in this league, Klay Thompson, JJ Redick. I think, you know, Booker maybe hasn't shown himself to be quite that high level of a shooter, just because he does play the game a little bit differently, looks to get inside and make plays a little bit more than those guys who can just be, you know, of one purpose when they catch the ball and go up and make a shot. But I think he's on that level as far as how you would use him. And imagine a player doing that type of thing within the flow of an offense, but having the threat of all the other stuff we know Booker can do. There's really not a lot of players like that. I mean, Bradley Beal's probably an example. Maybe Klay Thompson, when he kind of looks to do a little bit more, when he's not just nailing wide open shots, he's another guy. But there's very few players who even have that capability. So that would be incredibly exciting to watch. I mean, you think back even to what he was able to do kind of to diversify his offense with Eric Bledsoe, not last season for those three games, but the season before that, Booker's second season, they had some legit moments. They had some fun moments where both of them had just great performances playing off of one another. And, you know, I don't know if you're getting somebody at Bledsoe's level. Maybe it's a guy that's a little bit worse that you project to get a little bit better over the course of time, maybe eventually get to where Bledsoe was. That was Bledsoe's prime. But Booker's also a lot better than he was then. So I think it's almost tough to even imagine it at this point, because it has been so long. It's almost, you know, two and a half seasons since he's had somebody like that consistently. And I would love to watch it, but, you know, like we've said a million times, it's almost dumb to try to guess at this point.
Yeah, that's for sure. And before we go into our third segment here, I just wanted to point out, I got a few of these questions from my mentions over the past 24 hours. And before I go into that, I just wanted to nail off the schedule here for the Suns of December, at least the next 12 games, because I'm just guesstimating that Booker's probably about at least 3 weeks. So if it's a 3 week timetable, Kings at Trailblazers, Heat, Clippers at Spurs, Mavericks, Timberwolves at Knicks, at Celtics, at Wizards, at Nets, at Magic. If Booker isn't playing in any of those 12 games and TJ Warren misses, let's say, the first two or three games, how many of those are the Suns actually going to win?
I mean, not a ton if Booker plays none of those. I would guess, I mean, so that I know we're both kind of throwing shots in the dark here. We should probably, maybe by the next time we record after tomorrow's game or something, try to find some better examples of these players who have re-aggravated hamstring injuries, because it isn't something that is super common. I don't know if Lynn's the best example to me to base it off of, just because he played one game last year. So he didn't just have that injury and come back. I don't know where in the season that re-aggravation of the hamstring specifically came in, but he never came back. So maybe that was the season before, because I think last year was when he had the really crazy one, and he only played 36 games the year before too. So he's been a battered guy. But I would guess, just to have my you know, kind of hypothesizing here, that they try to get him to play, if not start the road trip in New York on the 17th, which is exactly 2 weeks from today. At some point during that road trip, try to come back. They have Boston, Washington, Brooklyn, Orlando, like you just said. So I think some of those games would be winnable in that case if Booker was there. I think New York's obviously a beatable team. Washington, similar. Brooklyn, Orlando, they just competed without Booker. So that road trip's not actually too tough, even though it is on the East Coast. As far as in the near future, I mean, Miami on Friday, and then that's probably all that I would bet on them winning.
Yeah, it's going to be rough sledding from here. But like I was going to say before, I've had a few people on my mentions yesterday come at me and ask the question. I think it's kind of not a bad question right now because he's so young, but I think give it a year before I can even answer this clearly. But I'll throw it your way, see if you have an answer. Is Devin Booker injury prone?
I think he is. I felt that way. I was starting to wonder about it at the very least when we heard about the wrist thing before this season. You couple that with him ending last season playing, I think, 56 games, the lowest by far of his career. He had been pretty much injury free for the first seasons of his career, and then last year only dipped all the way down to only playing 56. And this year, we've obviously already named all this stuff. So I am worried about it. I mean, it's something that I think does beg to be asked, because you don't do that with a guy who is like missed a season with a knee injury and recovered fully, or people who have just these random things like, oh, they fell on their hand and broke it, and then they, you know, got a concussion 2 seasons after that, and you look at it on the whole, wow, they've only played, you know, 100 games over 4 seasons, but they missed almost 2 entirely. That's kind of stuff. Okay, no. But with Booker, I mean, you list all these things, they're not random, they're not, you know, huge things that he's going to recover from. They're just cumulative nicks and bruises and dings that over time, I think you do have to worry about it, especially with the usage stuff we've already talked about. But let's move on, because we'll have more information over time with this Booker injury. And I think the important thing here is kind of seeing what could happen next. So we're going to go into the Frank Ntilikina rumors that sprouted up over the weekend. But before we do that, I want to talk to you guys one more time about advertising. You've heard a lot of the national stuff that we have going on here. It's been great. We love the sponsors we have, trying to localize and personalize that stuff as much as possible for you. A lot of those companies are pretty useful no matter where you live, but we want to make it as personalized, like I said, by going local. So if you run a business, if you know somebody who runs a business, if you are any way affiliated, work for a business that you think is a good match for us, we would love to talk to you. My email address is in my Twitter bio. We look at the comments section on Bright Side of the Sun if that's where you're finding the show. Throw us a reply on Twitter if that's where you're finding the show. Do whatever if you are interested, because like I said, you know, we try to prize ourselves on being as narrow to Phoenix and the Suns as possible. And obviously we want the advertising to reflect that as well. So reach out if you're interested and we would love to talk. Alrighty. So Frank Ntilikina, we were kind of talking about this on Friday when we were walking out of the stadium against the Magic after the Magic game. Where do you fall on this when, I guess, just comparing it to Markelle Fultz?
As far as that goes with Ntilikina, I would definitely prefer him over Markelle Fultz, because it just seems like you need an NBA-ready skill set next to Devin Booker and how you want him to build. So for me, Ntilikina has 6'5" with a 7'1" wingspan. Why not put a guy like him and Mikal Bridges next to Booker, next to DeAndre, and then let those guys cook as far as defense goes? Because Ntilikina has an NBA-ready skill. Markelle Fultz still doesn't have NBA-ready skill, and I think Ntilikina could eventually be an all-NBA defender. So I think easily I would go with Ntilikina over Fultz, but I want to hear your thoughts on that because it might be different.
Yeah, I think I would choose Fultz right now just because I think the upside's higher. I think to me, I actually don't think Fultz is – he is far away from where Ntilikina is now as a defensive player, just by way of this is – you know, Ntilikina has played more because Fultz has been in and out of the lineup for so long now. he has more physical gifts, being a little bit longer, being a little bit bigger in Lakina, but I don't think Fultz is actually that far away. I think he's a pretty positive defensive player at this point already as well. So I think both guys are going to be pretty massive projects. So I just think, you know, if you're knowing you're going to have to develop these guys no matter what you do, I would just bet on the guy with the higher ceiling. And I also feel like to a certain degree, you kind of would worry that Neal Aquina might come with a higher price tag because he is, you know, he's actually playing and he's a prized asset for his team, which Markel Fultz, as the days go by, becomes less and less of that. I think he's starting to be a guy who might not have much value at all, whereas Neal Aquina, I think, pretty much right about where he was when the team drafted him, the Knicks drafted him at 8.
Now, John Gamador reported, I believe on Friday, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but Ian Begley also reported before Gambo that the Suns inquired about Frank Neal Aquina, and Gambo said on Friday on his radio show that all it would take would be the Bucks pick. If that's all it takes, Brendan, I mean, why aren't they going after Neal Aquina? Because Neal Aquina just had a DNP CD, so I think something's up there. I think he's going to be moved here soon. If it, all it takes is an expiring like Dragan Bender and Troy Daniels plus the Bucks pick, absolutely, go get Frank Neal Aquina, because I think he's, if you look for a fifth guy in the starting lineup next to Bridges, Ayton, and Booker, a guy who focuses solely on defense, solely on playmaking, and just has all NBA defensive potential, which I talked about earlier, I think Neal Aquina makes a lot of sense. And I think it's kind of funny, to be honest. It's probably maybe Euro bias and maybe also just because he's young, but I find it funny how people wanted Patrick Beverley so bad and they wanted to get the Bucks pick for him. But if it, Frank Neal Aquina, who's the same guy almost, longer, not as good a shooter, but he's younger, more all, he has really good defense potential like Beverly does. Think about what Neal Aquina could be when he's like 26, 27. You see that happen, and then you see on Twitter, oh, Patrick Beverley for the Bucks pick, go ahead and do it. Then Frank Neal Aquina is like, for a Bucks pick, oh, absolutely not. Why, that guy's a bust. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I think people respect what Beverly's accomplished. The fact that he was, you know, on good teams already has been, I'm pretty sure he's already been on all defensive teams. So you kind of just, you're projecting Neal Aquina gets there. Maybe he never quite gets to be that sort of all around player. I think there's a certain amount too, where you're worried with this team of just adding another young guy. I mean, if you have the option of somebody like, you know, I have no idea anymore, but just use the name Corey Joseph, cause it has been around for so long, but even, you know, Terry Rozier, Spencer Dinwiddie, those are more veteran sure thing players, whereas Neal Aquina kind of feels like it might be another Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender situation where you're just crossing your fingers and hoping that he becomes what you know he could be, whereas those guys are the stability, and I think some people would prefer the stability. But, you know, I think at this point, I would prefer some of those other guys, but I think if you have the opportunity to go get somebody with as much potential, you're already 4-19. So yeah, okay. I want somebody at that spot. I want somebody who's going to get guys like Eli Okobo to play less and Jamal Crawford even to play less, provide a little bit so that Booker doesn't have to do quite as much. But I don't need a guy who's going to try to turn things around, because the reality is at this point, things aren't going to get turned around in 2018-19. You're looking toward the future, and Neal Aquina is the right guy for that, as is Fultz. But, you know, in this case, the most recent rumor kind of shows the Suns might be leaning toward Frank.
Now, I was just reading some Knicks forums recently just with the Neal Aquina rumors, and I know Brian Gibberman, he's a really big Knicks fan who used to cover the Suns, but he's talked a lot about Neal Aquina and praised him a little bit. But from the Knicks side of things, I went and looked around, scoured the internet, and it seems like everyone in the Knicks fandom is cool giving up Frank Neal Aquina, but the caveat is you have to take Courtney Lee's contract, which is $12 million next year. We talk plenty about the Suns needing more help next year in the back second unit, behind Devin Booker especially. Do you think Courtney Lee makes a lot of sense as far as buying the bull for around $11, $12 million for 2019-20? I mean, you see guys like Danny Green, who's going to be a free agent. He'll cost around $15 million. I think J.J. Redick probably around $15 million. Would you bite the bullet to get Frank for an 18-month development project and then also get a backup for Devin Booker's stable like Courtney Lee next year?
Yeah, I'll make this one simple. No, I don't think so. But I also don't think that I don't think the Knicks need to do that. I'm pretty sure they can open a max spot without getting I mean, I think they have to get off Courtney Lee, but I think that they can do that in a separate deal. They're going to be able to get somebody that could use him a little bit more, that maybe doesn't even have cap space next summer or has less of it, or just values Courtney Lee more. A good team he's way more valuable to a good team than he would be to the Suns. So I feel like they should still be shopping Ntilikina if that's what they want to do, and then they can get off Courtney Lee separately. But I just don't think he makes sense for the Suns.
Yeah, I agree with there. If it does only cost the Bucks pick, though, and not taking back Lee, I absolutely do it. But anything else as far as today's episode you want to hit on, Brennan?
Nope. We will see how this thing goes without Booker and Warren for one more night at least, I guess.
Yeah, and if it's an extended period, it's going to be a rough time. So appreciate you guys listening on today's podcast. As you guys know, we'll be back on Tuesday night to recap the Kings game live at Talk Stick Resort Arena without Booker and TJ Warren. And then, as you guys know, Wednesday, we're going to have Jackson Hoy, the step being on. I don't know if it's going to be a part or two-part episode yet or just a one-parter, but it's our first dose of draft season, Brennan. And unfortunately, a quarter of the way through the season, we kind of had to call on Jackson here because there's really not much to look forward to for the Suns roster outside of the draft already.
No, it lined up perfectly. We got this injury news and we're like, great. Well, we already were going to talk about the draft and now we really can dive into it.
Yep. That'll be it for today's episode, guys. We'll see you guys tomorrow night.